Angelo Cherry-Fred from Radio at the Venice Festival, here with Sue Brooks, the director of Looking for Grace. Sue, the dialogues are the key element in your film. They're very incisive for the screenplay. What is your method in writing?
I try to write the way that I imagine people will speak. It's about, for me, about how people say one thing and mean another, or worry about the wrong thing at the wrong time. When Dan and Denise are in the car together and he starts just thinking, you know, we have to change banks, and she's thinking, what's happening with the accounts, you know, because people are sort of living in parallel. This is my experience of life, is that you live in parallel worlds and you sort of connect occasionally, but you keep going together. So it's like you're holding hands. But I think also the more familiar you're with somebody, the stranger the communication can be sometimes too, you know.
Actually, when the parents of Grace come on screen, the tone of the movie changes a lot.
Yeah.
It becomes kind of a comedy, light and surreal comedy. And then at the end, the film changes pace again very sharply.
Mm-hmm.
Why did you choose those different
changes
and not like a continuous, say, classical story?
I just wanted to see if you could do it, really. I just wanted to know if you could go, you know, start somewhere and take people somewhere and then take them somewhere else again and still feel like you're in safe hands. I mean, the worst is if you feel like the director's abandoned you, you know, that would be terrible. But I wanted to feel like, you know, you're still being guided through the journey, but we're going to take you through some little comic absurd moments and peculiarities and then, but still keep you going.
How much of your personal experience is in the film?
It's a lot of it stolen out of my life and my friends' lives, and just they're not sexually real, you know, like these things didn't happen to me. When Tom the detective says, can you see my teeth when I talk, my father said that. He got some new dentures and he said, can you see my teeth, you know, you're 80, why are you caring about what you look like anymore? But
some reviews called your film a feminist road movie. What do you think about it?
Well, I don't mind being called a feminist. I'm a feminist, so that's a good thing to say, I think, yeah. I don't know that I think it's a feminist film in particular, but it's certainly a woman's film, I think. You know, when I watch it, I'm conscious that it's, I can see that it's written and directed by a woman. It feels like that. You're playing at the edges of expectations, but you don't want to piss people off. Do you know what I mean by that?
Yeah.
Yeah, you don't want to make them cranky that they walk out or they shut out from it. But you're trying to sort of intrigue people, say, well, we know the rules, but we're just bending them a little bit, you know. But it's all, you don't know until you're in front of an audience what, I mean, this for me is mecca to get people sort of responding to it. Do you know what I mean by that? It's just because you do everything in isolation for so long, you know, and then you think, oh, okay, Matt, go. Tell me what you think.
Do you think there is such a thing as a female or male movie?
I've said this a few times now. When you're making a film, you don't think, I'm making it as a woman. You know, you don't think, oh, my God, I'm a woman. I shouldn't be doing this. I'm making a film and this is what I'm making. But when you get to the end of it and people go, oh, this is different. Is that because you're a woman? You think, oh, well, maybe it is a bit. You know, I mean, because we see so many films made by men that our expectations have become defined by that a bit.
Film industry is mainly masculine. What do you think about the difficulty for a woman to make a career in this industry?
Film industry is mostly masculine. Do you think it's still difficult for a woman to make a career in this industry?
Make a career, yeah. I mean, I don't think that day to day, I don't wake up and think, oh my God, I'm burdened with being a woman, it's fucked, sorry. Do you know what I mean? You don't think that. But eventually you look at the numbers and the numbers are not good. And the women the Hollywood women are really talking about this now, aren't they? They're really saying, you know, enough. A lot of women out there who can make films, make good films. You start to look at that and you think, oh, well, maybe some of the resistance I got to getting it financed, maybe that's because, not because I was a woman, but because of the sorts of films that people feel comfortable with.
Did you change a lot from the original script when filming?
It did, and that wasn't so much about me as about the actors. When the actors took it, they took off with it.
Yeah.
It didn't so much change, but it was sort of like it went up and they took it.
Uh-huh.
And they were filling, you know, the space. I keep thinking of little examples, but one of them would be when Rada was, Denise, was in the kitchen and she moves the little vase of flowers across. You know, that's all Rada, you know. That's all just like, I'm going to move that. Okay, it's good. So it's sort of her life, you know, not her life, her creation.
Yeah.
So it was my creation and then she came in and created that. And then Rox came in. Richard Roxburgh came in and, like, the scene when he can't have his affair is...
That is very funny. That's really, really funny.
Good.
It's really funny because it's really real. I mean, it's real for his character.
Yeah, yeah.
You totally understand.
You believe him, don't you?
Absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Poor man.
Yeah, poor man. Poor weird man.
Poor weird man.
Normally
a good man would be able to do
for it. Yeah, exactly.
I'm in a hotel, I've booked it, she's here, that's all happening.
I was fascinated, I mean, not being Australian, I was fascinated by the space, of course.
Yeah, yeah.
And the emptiness. Because beside the emptiness of the open spaces, every single place they go to, there is no one.
Yes.
You know, it's the bus is nearly empty at the beginning. When the girls stop in this hotel, there is no one else.
Yeah.
And then go to the bar, there is no one. It was a choice. What was the reason for that choice?
I grew up in a small country town, and I think I love that sense of space. Mm-hmm. It matters a lot to me. So I am the only director you'll ever find who says I don't want any extras.
So you're the dream director for
anything. Yeah, exactly. That's why the producers like it. Because I don't want my mind to be distracted from somebody else doing something else. But, you know, I know what you mean. I look at it now and I think, oh, maybe there should have been another person in the bar. But you often do go into those bars and there's just, you know, two people down the back or one person.
What would be your dream reception from the audience for this movie?
I had one dream response from it last night from a friend who came all the way from Australia to see it. And she said, I was totally captivated by it. I had no idea where it was going, and every character started to claim the film, and then another one would claim it, another one would claim it, and she said, and at the end I felt complete. So that was my dream.
Pretty good.
Pretty good, isn't it?
Pretty good. Absolutely, yeah.
She is a friend, but just
yeah,
the same.
You know, friends could be even the worst.
They can be bad, yeah.
Exactly. Okay.
Thank you to Sue Brooks, director of Looking for Grace. It was Angelo Cerbi for Fred Film Radio from the Venice Film Festival.
Fred Film Radio, 24/7 on fred.fm and smartphone apps.